Welcome to the Goals Podcast, the business case for women's sports, where we explore every corner of the women's sports industry from the field to the front office. I'm Caroline Fitzgerald, and I'm here to prove that it's good business to be in the business of women's sports. Today's episode is brought to you by Ally, a change maker in women's sports, steadfast in their commitment to the fight for media equity, because we're all better off with an ally. Our guest today is Rachel Goodger, the Chief Revenue Officer at CrowdIQ. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you on the show today and hear more about you and also more about all the incredible work that you're doing at CrowdIQ. So if you're good with it, I'd love to start there by hearing more about your personal and career journey through sports, because I know you've had quite a tenure, both as an athlete and a pro. So talk us through your career path that ultimately led you to this position as the CRO at CrowdIQ.
When you say like athlete and stuff, I feel so washed up now, which is, you know, hilarious. The further you get out of playing competitively, the more I'm like, I picked up a hockey stick for the first time in forever this winter and threw it my back. I'm like the second shot. And I'm like, yep, can't do that anymore. but definitely a heavy sports background, which is why I'm thrilled that I ended up in the sports business world. Played hockey 4 years for the University of Minnesota, women's ice hockey team. Pretty awesome 4 years. We won 3 national championships. So got to give a lot of credit to the coaching staff, the team, the culture that we had there. It was really incredible, but led to a lot of great memories on and off the ice and a lot of incredible learnings that in the end definitely translated, you know, into this business and this world.
And what position did you play?
I was a defenseman. I like to say 5'12", 6 feet tall though. And they throw the big girls on D. So I laughed. I was always, always forward until I got to college and I showed up and they're like, yeah, you're gonna be playing defense now. You're way too tall to be playing forward. So we're moving you. So that was a fun adjustment, but it worked out great. I think our D core ranged from 5'10" to 6'2" when I showed up coming from, you know, from high school and walked into the doors of a locker room. I was like, these are my people. Look how tall everyone is. And running around campus with like the volleyball girls or the basketball girls. I'm like, I love this. I fit in. This is my happy place.
Oh my gosh. So you win three national championships. You have a great college experience. What do you do right when you leave school?
Yeah. When I left, I landed with a small mobile app company. When I say small, it was the two founders and myself with nothing built, just kicking off. But it was, I'm in Minneapolis and that's where the company was based out of. And it was a company that was, you know, diving into the kind of in-seat delivery, in-venue experience that a lot of apps were, you know, a couple years back. And so we jumped in with some, you know, minor league baseball and things like that, started developing the platform. And it was a great learning experience. I was able to wear, I mean, every hat under the sun, from, you know, screwing chairs and desks together to put together an office as we were hiring, to, you know, doing outlines for what the app was going to look like when I had no idea what I was doing in Photoshop or any kind of web design. So that into sales, it was a really great couple of years of experience getting out of school there. And I met the FanCam team and CrowdIQ team actually at a conference. And we started conversations of, okay, this is a really cool platform and technology. How can we integrate some of this into what we're doing and bring it to fans in the venue? And then they ended up, you know, looking to hire and grow on that side. And I jumped over to that team and it's been kind of a wild ride ever since.
Now you're CrowdIQ, which was, correct me if I'm wrong, FanCam, and yes, now has completely shifted and you are CrowdIQ. Can you tell the story of how that shift happened? When did you change from FanCam to CrowdIQ and what is CrowdIQ now?
Yeah, it really happened right when I joined on about 6.5 years ago. So when I joined, it was a fan engagement company and we created these big 360-degree images at sporting events and concerts and things like that. Our first big event was actually U2's tour back in 2010, 2011. And that's where the company got its footing. We're based out of Cape Town, South Africa. That's where the entire team is essentially, except for myself at the moment, even though we are growing here, staff in the US. But it's these big photos. Fans can zoom in, find themselves in the crowd, share it out on social media. And really back in the day, we worked with brands and agencies and sponsors. So it could be somebody like, you know, an Anheuser-Busch wants to have some of their brands be a sponsor of name of, you know, a Lollapalooza or something like that. And they'd give us a call and say, hey, we want to activate this. And it was back, I think, 2016 when a sponsor wanted us to capture a bunch of Knicks and Rangers playoff games. So we thought, why send a photographer so many times? What happens if we install cameras at MSG? And that was the first installation. It was still entirely around this fan-facing, fan engagement product, but we started to install in more and more venues, and we kind of noticed something, which was that every fan base, every crowd looked different. You know, the big markets versus the small markets, how many opposing team fans travel to a big city versus a small market, things like that. How many fans were in the stands, how many fans showed up late or left early. It all looked different because we were capturing, you know, throughout the game so we could publish the image that had the most fans in it. And so as we kind of stared at these photos more and more, we noticed some, all of that. And we thought, could we train a computer to pick up what we're seeing, you know, approximately, you know, how many female fans are there or how many kids are in the crowd or when fans arrive, stuff like that. And the answer was yes. And so we set out to create CrowdIQ, our crowd analytics platform. So now we definitely still publish a lot of fan cams, and that's a big part of our business. But we've definitely pivoted here in the past 6 years to focus on crowd data and what the composition and behavior of crowds looks like.
That's incredible. So who are your customers or your clients? Who do you primarily work with on a day-to-day basis?
Primarily the teams at this moment. We're installed with 18 venues across five major men's sports leagues at the moment. Looking to get in with a couple of female teams here very shortly. So hopefully we have some exciting announcements around the corner. But that's usually who it is right now. It is typically teams on the CrowdIQ side. We definitely work with brands too on the fan cam side. We worked with T-Mobile last year and did Justin Bieber's US tour, which was really exciting, and published fan cams for every single one of those. But as far as CrowdIQ goes, it's usually the teams right now that's leading us to do these installs.
So you are experts in crowd analytics. How do the teams that you work with use the information and your services and the insights that you pull to inform their business decisions?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, I mean, the rule of thumb is kind of anything you and I can deduce from an image, a computer can be trained to detect. So, for example, ticket data may show that 90% of fans have scanned into the venue at kickoff. They know the venue is 90% full, but the team doesn't know how many fans are in their seats actually at kickoff. Our data might show only 50% of fans are actually seated when, you know, a puck drop or tip off or whatever it is. And with that being the case, should fans be going through different gates? Are there traffic flow jams and things like that? How many fans stay in their seats during a halftime show or, you know, in between period breaks and things like that? And what are they paying attention to? So a lot of that kind of those insights can be gleaned. And then even just the demographic data is really interesting. We can't say who anybody is in the crowd. It's all, you know, the computer taking their best guess of, we're 95% confident this is a female fan between the ages of 27 and 34. But you get a lot of really interesting information out of that. You know, we have saw an NFL team of ours who skewed higher female fans during primetime games. So they knew Monday nights, Thursday nights, Sunday nights, more female fans are going to be in the venue, things like that. Or even just the overall age of the fan. The crazy thing is that teams know who bought the ticket, but they don't know who comes with. So from our data, we still can't tell you who comes with, but you can assume maybe dad brought kids, or, you know, partners came or friends came or things like that, and get a better understanding of what your fan base looks like.
So interesting. We love the data and the analytics here at Goals. And it just seems like such an incredible tool for enhancing user experience at these games, at these events, and driving business opportunities for these teams. Like, it sounds like you're creating these like real data-driven win-win situations between the fans and the teams that you're working with.
Totally. And I mean, that's our big goal. I think the pandemic was interesting for us because we are a crowd business and there were no crowds for a couple of years. So, it was, you know, what on earth do we do? And it gave us the opportunity to kind of step back, though, and develop. So we were ready to hit the ground running when fans returned. And I think coming out of the pandemic, we've grown so substantially because a lot of teams, I think, are realizing they're not in the sports business, they're in the crowd business. Obviously, the product on the court or the ice or the field, it does impact what's going to be happening for fans and what attendance and things looks like. But your fans are your business. You need them to buy your merchandise. You need them to be in your venue. You need them to be actively entertained and engaged. So how do you better serve the fans? And that's the entire goal around this kind of data. We have something called attention tracking, and we're looking at basically a subsection of the crowd. And we're just looking at, where are these fans looking? Are they looking at their phones? Are they looking at the field? Are they looking up at the big screen? And by knowing that kind of data, you can start to see what activations fans are paying attention to, what they don't care about, and kind of improve that in-venue experience. And, you know, it's all very, very new data, which I think we're a little bit early to the industry and the market with what we're providing. But the coolest thing is it's data that's, you know, retroactive. You can always go back if you have photos and learn more. So we're excited about what the future holds for sure.
That's amazing. As you guys are going through this data and working with these teams, are there any key trends that you're seeing around sports fandom across the industry over the last 1 to 2 years since, you know, things have really opened up again after the height of the global pandemic?
Yeah, I think there's one thing that we've seen across all the teams that we've worked with and all of these different leagues is, and men's sports is something interesting. It's that female fans in your venue decline as they get older. We're seeing it's often almost a 50-50 split of kids under 10. If you're looking at what percentage of the crowds are boys versus girls in the venue, which makes sense. Gen Z, you know, it might be similar, might be 50-50, 45, 55, something like that. But the older the fans get, the fewer female fans are in the venue. And I have two theories around this, and we'll have to, you know, time will tell which one it is. But it's always been like this, and sports just doesn't retain female fans. Older women get, the less they care, the less they want to go to sporting events. Or what I hope it is, and what's exciting, is that we've done such an incredible job in sports of drawing young girls in to want to play sports, want to watch sports, and we're giving them female athletes to look up to, that they're coming out in droves. And now all of a sudden you have all these kids and it is 50-50 of who's in the venue, and Gen Z is staying involved. And I hope it's that. And I think over time, we'll see if that holds true now, if it's more of a 50-50 split as these fans get older. But in capturing some women's games and women's sports, we've seen something different though. It is almost 50-50 across the whole entire, you know, line from kids all the way up to your boomers and even post-war 77 plus. So that's really interesting. And I think that says something for sponsors and brands that are looking to get involved with women's sports, is you have a really unique opportunity to reach a crowd that is different from, you know, your current major five.
That's really interesting. And there is honestly pretty limited data out there around women's sports fans. Mm-hmm. But the data that we do have tells us that women's sports fans have different behaviors and different demographic makeups and different tendencies than traditional fans of men's sports. So as your team continues to build out and work with more women's sports teams and properties, I'm going to be really curious to see more of those key learnings, like you just outlined, about those differences between the customer of men's sports and the customer of women's sports.
No, us too. I think it's going to be really interesting to see, because it's the brand affiliation. I mean, I've read so much about that with women's sports, is how women's fans are going to engage differently with the sponsors than men are going to. And if you have more women at a WNBA game or a National Women's Soccer League game, how do you reach that fan base and modify it? And I think some teams, at least right now, we're kind of shy, and ownership groups are shying away from that. And so we don't want to necessarily be different. Look at the models that have worked. Let's replicate. And my thought is, do the opposite. Look at your fan base. Look who is there, and reach the brands that normally would never even consider associating themselves with a sports team, especially these, you know, teams, National Women's Soccer League, WNBA, that are in markets that have 2, 3, 4 other men's teams. You have an opportunity to reach brands that these teams can't engage with.
I want to stay with women's sports for a few questions here. So looking around at the women's sports space, both as a former collegiate athlete and as a sports industry professional for the last decade, what are some of the key trends that excite you about the future of women's sports? And you might have just answered that question with your previous answer, but what are some of those things that show you that there's real promise here within the women's sports industry?
Yeah, my big thing is looking at the teams that are having a lot of success, like Angel City FC right now is thriving attendance-wise, the amount of revenue they're generating from sponsors and things like that. And I think what I'm just excited to see is how female fans continue to show up in troves at these games. And if that trend continues, it's a really exciting outlook for the future. And you have, you know, the Kansas City Current that is building a beautiful new stadium. You know, these teams now are building their own venues and things like that. It's exciting. And I think it's only going to continue to go up because I think we're seeing, again, young girls want to get involved in playing sports. And the more role models that they have to look up to, the more that they're going to want to play. I mean, I saw that when I was playing boys hockey growing up, because we didn't have girls hockey until I was 10 or 11. And I looked up to our high school team because that was kind of the big thing in town. And then I grew up in Minnesota and I remember going to my first Gopher women's hockey game. And my grandparents took me, I think it was my 10th or 11th birthday. And my grandma looked over and she goes, "You need to close your mouth. Your mouth is just wide open." I was just jaw dropped watching this. And I was like, oh my gosh, I could do this. I could play, you know, like this one day. And obviously in women's ice hockey, they're still doing a lot to try to establish the leagues and things like that. But it's so cool to see in soccer. It's so cool to see in basketball that these young girls get to show up and watch their heroes and think, I could become that one day. And as the popularity continues to grow, attendance continues to grow, I think it's only going to get stronger.
I agree. Rachel, we have a lot of women's sports industry professionals that listen to the Business Case for Women's Sports. So is there anything that you're seeing around fan demographics and behavior that you think could be useful information for these professionals as they work to connect with their fans and stakeholders?
I think every team is going to be unique and every league is certainly unique, but we are going to be seeing different trends in women's sports than in men's sports. It's just who shows up is different. So I think we need more data around that. Hello to anybody listening. We need more teams to work with on the women's side to have that data to provide to these teams. But I think it's that. And I also think something that we have seen, though, over the last 6 or so years is that the demographic that these teams have oftentimes is not the demographic of who's in your stadium. In Major League Baseball alone, we've seen their average age is 10 to 11 years younger than the ticket data that teams have. And a big part of that is who buys the ticket is not necessarily who actually attends the game. And you don't have kids. That's another big thing. You know, ticketing data, this reporting data isn't reporting on the number of kids in the venue, surveys and things like that. But baseball, especially, think of how many kids and families turn out at a ballpark. If you don't have that, you know, you've got dad is 40. That's the average age for the four fans there, but it's actually could be 12 if he brings his little kids. So it's different. And I think we're seeing a lot of kids show up to women's sporting events. So that's going to be, you know, I think a big factor that the age of your fans might be different than, you know, the number you currently have and probably lower.
Rachel, believe it or not, we're almost at the end of our conversation today. That happened quickly, but before we close it out, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with our rapid fire closing questions.
As you may know, the goal of this podcast is to show brands, networks, and people in general that it's good business to invest in women's sports. We know that women in sports are incredible and are breaking boundaries and setting records. But did you know they receive less than 10% of all sports media coverage? It's a vicious cycle. The lack of media coverage means fans miss out, while networks and sponsors can't see the fan base and don't invest in the media. Now, more than ever, it's time for brands to jump in. That's why our sponsor, Ally, is making big moves to put an end to the cycle and give women's sports the coverage they deserve. This year, Ally is continuing to invest in access for women's sports through sponsorships with ESPN, CBS, and women-owned outlets, giving fans more opportunities to watch what they want, where they want. So tune in and be part of the change. To learn more, check out watchtochange.com because we're all better off with an ally.
All right, Rachel, we are coming back with our final questions on the podcast. So I'll start with the first one. If you were going to wave a magic wand and create equity in one aspect of sports, what would it be?
Screen time, TV time, airtime. Look at what, you know, the women's Final Four did this last year. Look at what USA versus Canada does in ice hockey for the Olympics for women's sports. I mean, there is an audience for it. And these big events and games and tournaments and things are showing that. And I think we are seeing an increase in screen time and airing for women's sports, but for it to continue again, because in order for women's sports to grow and to continue to grow, that means that the next generation is going to have exposure to it and know it exists and want to play and want to grow up to be that. And so I think a big part of that starts with TV.
I agree. And I like that you said TV and screen time, because I think sometimes we get stuck on the TV piece, but women's sports fans are very digitally savvy and they like to consume their women's sports content through their phones, through screens, through streaming. So I think that's a great answer. I don't think we ever had that answer.
Really? So, I mean, that's the big one for me in looking at, like, you know, SportsCenter top 10 or things like that. That's not necessarily having an entire game broadcast, but there can be a really sick play in women's sports too. And when you see that an awesome catch or in softball or something like that, it's to me just as cool as watching a guy dive in Major League Baseball and make an awesome catch. So when you get to see that kind of stuff show up in SportsCenter top 10, which they're doing so much more of these days as well, it's just making it, I think, so much more normalized. And it's funny. I used to, I think, almost take like a second look 10, 15 years ago. If you saw a women's sport highlights in a scenario like that, you're like, did you just see that? That was a WNBA play or something like that. And now I don't bat an eye. I mean, it is becoming more normal. And that, I think, is the goal.
I agree. All right. Before we get to our last question, is there anything that you want to plug or share with our listeners?
I think the cool thing is that we're just growing fast, which is awesome. And the bigger we get in different leagues, the more data we can share. We just did our first NFL comparative report this last year. We have 8 NFL partners. So they were able to actually, have their data anonymized to compare to each other and see what their average age looks like, how many fans they have in their seats at, kickoff compared to other teams. But in order to do that, you have to have enough teams in each league to anonymize that data. So we're on our way with other leagues, but women's sports is an area that we haven't necessarily tackled yet. And like I said, I'm hoping we have some exciting announcements coming up here soon this summer. But if anybody is interested in, you know, having a better understanding of what's going on in the venue or wants a really great sponsorship asset in FanCam, just give me a shout. It's an area we'd really love to get into more.
I love that. And if you're okay with it, we'll link to your LinkedIn page in the show notes so anyone can contact you through that platform.
Love it.
All right, last question, and we always close with this question here on the Business Case for Women's Sports. Can you summarize in a few sentences why you think it's good business to invest in women's sports?
I think we've talked about it a little bit, but the fan base for women's sports looks different than the fan base for men's sports. And that means there is a massive opportunity to reach fans that you wouldn't reach somewhere else. And like you said, the way that female sports fans engage and react with the brands tied to their favorite teams is different than how fans engage and react with the brands tied to men's sports. So there's a huge opportunity there. And I think it's a gold mine for brands looking to get into that world.
Great answer. Perfect closer. Rachel, thank you so much. It has been such a joy chatting with you today. I really appreciate you sharing all of your insights, and I'm excited to see everything you and the team at CrowdIQ continue to do, especially in the women's sports space.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me. This was a really awesome conversation.
Thank you for listening to the Goals Podcast, the business case for women's sports presented by Ally, a change maker in women's sports steadfast in their commitment to the fight for media equity, because we're all better off with an ally. To learn more about Goals and our work to bring more brand investment into women's sports, be sure to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram, or visit our website at goals-sports.com. And remember, it's simply good business to be in the business of women's sports.